Assalamu alaikum, everyone. My name is Muhi Khwaja with American Muslim Community Foundation, and today on the Muslim Philanthropy Podcast, we have on Petra El-Sufi, the Outreach and Partnerships Manager at the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding. Welcome to the show, Petra.
Thank you so much for having me, Muhi.
Of course. I'm really excited to have the opportunity to chat with you because ISPU is an organization that is near and dear to my heart. I used to work there as the Associate Development Officer from 2010 to 2012. So our paths didn't cross while we were there, but really fond of anybody who is affiliated with ISPU.
I'm so glad to know that. And it's such a small world to see so many people who are involved with ISPU. So I'd love to know more from you, what you know, about your work back then.
Yeah, definitely. Being born and raised in Michigan, it's kind of hard not to know the organization just because so many of the founders were from Michigan as well. But it's really become a national organization that does fantastic work across the country. And I've been inspired by the research in particular on the American Muslim community, and would love to get into a few of those different studies with you later. I want to learn more about you and kind of your background being in Michigan. And I'm sure we know many people that, connect us, but just want to give our listeners a little better sense of your background as well.
Yeah, once you're from especially the east side of Michigan, you know, it's such a small community. Everyone knows everyone. I went to school at Grand Valley State University in the west side of the state. So definitely different from the east side, where we have a large community of Muslim Americans. I am the Outreach and Partnerships Manager at ISPU right now for the last year and a half. Actually, almost 2 years. Time is flying. Before that, I was an educator at the Arab American National Museum for about 5 years, where I did a lot of similar work to what I do today, but most, closer with educators, with professionals, policymakers. And how I get to those two institutions, I studied political science and history. Many people my generation who grew up post 9/11, not knowing exactly what we wanted to do in life. We did process of elimination, remove the things that we didn't want to do. We're very lucky to end up in great institutions. I worked at U of M, the School of Business, doing leadership development, then at the Arab American Museum. I had the best luck and the fortune to end up at ISPU.
That's really exciting. I can definitely see Grand Valley State University being a total transition from the Dearborn area. So in terms of, the work that you've done, it seems primarily at nonprofit organizations. And what would you say is the thing that called you to work at these institutions?
Yeah, it's a good question. I did not picture myself in those places when I started school. It was one of those things where, you're going to go study, become a teacher or a doctor or something like most people in our community. Just because of the community I went to school at, where not a lot of Muslim Americans, went to school. It's called the Bible Belt of the Midwest. I also grew up in a community that didn't have a large Muslim Americans. So by virtue of just being me, visibly Muslim, visibly brown, in the era that I went to school, and I ended up doing a lot of education about Arab Americans, Muslim Americans, who we are, what we do, issues that impact us. And I think what I now consider my calling is I saw the difference that it was making in people's life. And I know it's really hard to do one-on-one education and think that you're going to change everyone's mind, but it really changed people's mind when you sit down and have a conversation with them and address misconceptions. And when I joined, for example, when I joined the Arab American Museum, it was a platform, and it was an opportunity to do that at a larger scale, but specifically addressing Arab American issues. And now at ISPU, it was finally my opportunity to, you know, do something that I have been doing for the last 15, 16, 17 years, except at a larger scale, and to reach an audience with facts and with data, with research that was not available to us before at all. And I think that's what makes this work rewarding and meaningful.
Yeah, so let's talk about a few of those different research reports. Like, I'm familiar with the American Muslim Poll that I think started in 2017 or 2018. And, you know, what have some of those things that you guys have been tracking over the years been to tell the story of who American Muslims are?
Yeah. So American Muslim Poll is, you know, one of our biggest research projects. This is a national survey that we do every year for the last 5 years. You know, there are so many things that are beautiful about that report. The first one is it's a national survey. It's opinions of the general public, you know, general American public, but then include American Muslims, which you don't find in other reports or other research organizations' work. And then another layer that makes it really exciting for me, again, as someone who grew up in non-Muslim communities, worked mostly with non-Muslims, and now working with both Muslims and non-Muslims, it also include, you know, the opinions of other faith groups, not just Muslim Americans. So you could see the views or the opinions of not only American Muslims, but Jews, Protestants, white evangelicals, general public, and non-affiliates on the exact same issue. And to me, that's really important, because growing up and going to school and being in the communities that I was in, and also, like, you know, the narrative post 2001 is that American Muslims were just so different from everyone else. So now American Muslim Poll allow us to, you know, to say with fact and with certainty whether they are so different or whether they're similar to other faith communities, and on what are issues do they agree on, and what issues do they have different opinion, and what motivates them. So that's one research report that we do. And the issues that we measure, that we study in that report, for example, over the last 30 years, we've been measuring Islamophobia Index. We developed the Islamophobia Index with the Bridge mm-hmm. Initiative, and that's seeing how how much does the general public agree with, you know, certain stereotypes that lead or that push the public to support discriminatory policies against Muslims and other minorities. So we've been studying that for the last 30 years. We also study, you know, civic engagement, you know, how civically engaged or not engaged are American Muslims, everything from voting, voter registration, to also other forms of civic engagement. And then the other piece of it is including community related issues. For example, divorce, disability, domestic violence, you know, philanthropy, which we'll talk about later. Religiosity, how religious or not religious are American Muslims compared to other faith communities, and just a wealth of other topics that are covered in this report.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've seen definitely an expansion in civic engagement over the last two decades, for sure. And I think more recently, we've been starting to see more expansion into social services and taking care of community needs. And, you know, it's good to have this research, because then it can tell us, you know, where are the gaps? What are things that the Muslim community needs to be thinking about for the next two decades? And I think it's really a positive way to tell the story of what the American Muslim community is doing. And one of my favorite pieces from ISPU is also the Muslims for American Progress, where you guys highlight dozens of Muslim leaders across the country, I believe primarily in New York and Michigan, telling the stories of everyday Muslims, whether they're teachers or physicians or community leaders. And it's a really good expose to understand the different community members and the diversity in the Muslim community as well. So, you know, there's a lot of studies from Brookings to Pew Research to ISPU that talks about the ethnicity breakdown of the Muslim American community, and a highly contested figure of the number of Muslims in the United States. But can you share a little bit more about MAP and some of those demographics of the Muslim community?
Yeah, absolutely. And as you know, our research focuses on three areas. One of them is community building and capacity building. So that's focusing on, you know, what issues and capacity issues exist in the American Muslim community and how we could help inform that capacity building. The second one is protecting American pluralism. And then the third one is highlighting American Muslim impact. So the report you mentioned, American for Muslim Progress, we have two reports, one out of Michigan, which American Muslims make 2.75% of the population in Michigan, and then New York City, which Muslims comprise 9% of the population in New York City. Wow. Right now, we're very proud to announce we just started working with the Illinois Civic Coalition to do a similar report or a need assessment of the community in Illinois. And our goal is to expand that, but it's a massive project that requires a lot of work and a lot of resources. But as you mentioned, the American Muslim community is the most ethnically diverse faith community in the nation. We have 28% that are African American, 8% that are Latino, 14% Arab, and then we have, Asian, white. There is no such diversity that exists in other, there's some kind of diversity with other faith communities, but nothing that measures the diversity of American Muslims. You're right to say, the number is contested. How many millions? We like to say it's 1% of the population. It's similar in size to the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. There's so many issues with trying to get an exact number, but that's the best guess, best estimate that we could have right now is 1%. And we're trying to do as many communities as possible. So with that diversity, as you could imagine, both the challenges and the opportunities are great. And there's an overlap between the communities, but also there are special challenges or special issues that might exist for specific communities. And that's another layer of studying the research that we're trying to do.
Yeah, and when it comes to looking at the age of Muslims, and then if they're over 18, are they voting, and do they have citizenship, and all of these other things in terms of the communities. But I think it's really great to see, the Michigan study, the New York study, and now hopefully the Illinois study, because then they can take this data, go to their school districts, talk to them about how many Muslims are in the schools, trying to get Eid as a holiday, so many other things that would then impact just kind of the legislation that can benefit the Muslim community as well. And I remember early on, back when I was working at ISPU, one of the earlier studies was about like zoning issues and building mosques and getting the right permits in place and making sure that the zoning commission knows what is being done at the mosque, how the mosque board should go about proposing the upgrades and everything like that. So again, very critical research that has always been done by ISPU through the years.
Yeah, and I mean, these are just some of the issues, and we have two upcoming reports that address different issues with mosques. One of them is a research that will that's Dr. Bagby's study on American mosques. So that's an upcoming one that we'll publish, I think, later in the year. We'll show us mosques around the country, how many, what kind, all of that. And then the other one is a study that addresses challenges with mosques. We have other projects that talk about you know, the mosques that already exist, are they addressing the needs of the communities they serve or not? You know, are they addressing the needs of American Muslim youth? You mentioned we have a lot of, we are the youngest faith community in the nation. So you could imagine just the plethora of issues that relate to American Muslim Muslim youth. Are the mosques welcoming and open to women? You know, are women serving on the board? So we have one thing that's really important about our research is we don't just tell you what the problem is. We provide research-based recommendations on how you could address those challenges that exist. So we know a lot of people are talking about, you know, the certain mosques are not welcoming to youth, or the certain minority mosques are not welcoming to, for example, African-American youth. So we show what the research tell us, some steps that could be taken to make those mosques more welcoming, or what kind of programming need to be done for American Muslim youth. And also the progress that's being has taken place. For Muslims for American Progress, what's really interesting is this project was done a couple of years ago. And it's, you know, faces and stories of, if you're in that community, those are people that are like everyday people to you. You know, you look at them and you're like, oh, I know brother so-and-so, or I know sister and so-and-so. And then when we were doing those interviews and looking at the work they've done, it's just mind-blowing, like, how involved and how much work they do on behalf of the community. And sometimes we take that for granted. And one last piece about this is the power of being able to share those stories with the next generation. I was doing a presentation for a group of high schoolers. And as you know, we didn't grow up hearing a lot of positive stories about Muslims in the media or anywhere else. And we've always heard the negative stories. So, you know, the high school group was talking, and we're addressing Islamophobia, we're addressing domestic terrorism, we're addressing all of these issues. And then I pulled out the Michigan report and I said, well, we're in Michigan. Do you know, first of all, that we make 2.75% of the population, but we make up 15% of the medical doctors in the state? So I started giving them some of that information, and the Muslim kid in the group looked at me and he was so happy. And he said, I didn't know that. You know, this is so powerful because I didn't know the kind of impact that we're making in the state, let alone the country. And this is something that I need to look at more and understand it deeper. So I could share this with my classmates or with teachers who, you know, might be saying the wrong thing, or, you know, when I hear the wrong story somewhere. So it was a really, really powerful moment to see a young Muslim American feel very proud of who he is and who he was, because he, you know, for the first time, or for, you know, one of the few times, he was able to hear just the positive impact, but also just the normalcy, like, normal people, you know. It was a really powerful moment for him and for me to be able to share that.
Yeah, and you know, what are some of the ways that people can have this data at their fingertips? Obviously, they can go to the website and read through the reports and the executive summaries and have all of that, but I remember there being like an educators program or initiative at ISPU. So do you guys hold regular meetings where some of this information is disseminated to different community leaders so that they can be better informed?
Absolutely. Great question. So we try to make this information as accessible as humanly possible. So in terms of leaders, what we have done is we created toolkits. If you go to the website isbu.org and you go under toolkits, you will see toolkits for imams, toolkits for journalists, toolkits for policymakers, a toolkit on the experience of African American Muslims. So whatever subject you're interested in, or whatever, you know, your background is, you could go to those toolkits and see not only the research, but the recommendation in a format of infographics, videos, charts, whatever way you want it, it's available. But you could also, you know, we host regular programming on a regular basis. So anytime we have a new report or a new analysis, we try to hold either an event or a way to get it out to the public. And now with everything being virtual, those are very accessible to everyone. We do in-depth training for certain groups. So, for example, teachers, we do teach teacher trainings based because our research show, you know, half of American Muslim families have a kid who've experienced religious-based bullying, and one out of three cases is at the hand of a school teacher or a school administrator. So we do in-depth training. Another thing is, you know, anytime there is an issue going on or an organization is trying to address an issue or want to research on an issue, they could easily reach out to us at ISPU and we could set up a meeting, talk to them about what resources we have. I could send them the research that we have available in an easy format. We do public speaking engagement all the time. So anytime a group wants to host a conversation on a topic and wants us to present the data, we're always happy to partner, you know, really with anyone. So anyone who needs access to the information, if you can't find it, get a hold of us. We'll make it available to you. And we will do our best to get it to the right hands anytime it's needed.
And what I love about that, too, is that ISPU reports, data have been in congressional briefings and, you know, in decisions where foreign policy, domestic policy is being made and also at the hands of the community as we need it. So it's very powerful to see the impact that ISPU has been having for over 20 years. And one of the things that I absolutely love about ISPU is that in 2020, the board of directors received an award for being one of the best examples of board governance. So it's really great to see that the organization all around is being recognized not only for the important work it's doing, but how they do it. So kudos to the ISPU team on that.
Thank you. And as you know, this is one of the most challenging pieces for nonprofit organizations is just how to cycle off board members, especially founder board members. I mean, when founders start an organization, they put their heart and soul into it. And it's not as easy to, you know, to put it in other people's hands. But what's really unique and special about ISPU is our board right now does not include any of the founders of ISPU. We were able to establish metrics and system and, you know, training in place to have it transition off. And this is a huge, huge success story, especially for nonprofits, especially in in Muslim spaces. So this is something that we're really proud of. And you're right, our work has been, you know, our research have been cited by, you know, by now President Biden, but when he was running, it was part of his platform. Bernie Sanders, it was part of his platform. Elizabeth Warren, it was part of her platform, especially addressing Muslim issues. And we sent our research off to Capitol Hill all the time when there are hearings or issues that, whether they're related to Muslim Americans or not, as I mentioned, one of our goals is to protect American pluralism. So we have a lot of research that, yes, there's a Muslim piece to it, but at the end of the day, it impacts all Americans and it impacts American democracy. So when there is an opportunity to share that piece with whether it's policymakers or organizations that are doing work in that space, we definitely make that research available.
Yeah, and I think that's the power of data, you know, being able to share across different faith groups, see the correlations, see the similarities. So even when it comes to interfaith work or when it comes to this policy work, there's a lot of different ways that it could be put to use. I want to focus on the American Muslim Philanthropy Report because American Muslim Community Foundation sponsored the report, but also because we're in the space of philanthropy and charitable giving, and just want to see what some of the research has shown. You know, many of us are familiar with Giving USA, a report done by Indiana University that talks about, you know, the overall space of $450 billion of charitable giving in 2019. But we want to also see, you know, if Muslims are 1% of the population, is philanthropic support going to Muslim-led initiatives in the same equal amount, or are Muslims giving at the same pace of standard philanthropy when it comes to our zakat and sadaqah? Obviously, there's a lot of challenges there because not all Muslim philanthropy is given to nonprofit organizations. But, you know, there's a lot to talk about here, and would love to just kind of see what the research project broke down and talked about.
Yeah, there's, I mean, as you know, there's just a lot of misconceptions about, you know, philanthropy in the Muslim American community. And this report is really special because it's one of the, few times where we're able to say, okay, here's how American Muslims give, here's what they give to, here's how they do it compared to other faith communities. And as you know, 50% of American Muslims are born here, 50% were born overseas. So there's that assumption of, do we give more domestically or do we give more to overseas? There's just ton of data, tons of information on that report, but there are a few things I wanna highlight. First of all, American Muslim giving is motivated by their religion. So this is, in a way, it's not surprising, but on the other hand, it was really cool to see that, to have the research confirm that American Muslims give because they believe this is their religious duty and because they believe, you know, those who have more should give to those who have less. So that was that was really cool to find out. And there is no surprise, Muslim Americans give a lot to their places of worship. You know, I know this is both a recurring ask in all American Muslim communities. There's always a mosque being built. There's always need to support mosques. But what's really special about that is this is not different than any other faith community. You know, across faith communities, we find people give, about 89% contribute to their places of worship. Okay. Outside of places of worship or houses of worship, Muslims give both domestically and to overseas causes. And they also give to causes inside the Muslim American community and outside of the Muslim community. Okay, so this is something that's also really important to remember. It's about equal how they give to Muslim and non-Muslim institutions. So we didn't really find a huge difference there. It's like 53% compared to 52% outside of the faith community. So there is really not a huge gap there. One thing, again, that is both not a huge surprise but also reassuring is we found the after houses of worship, domestic poverty is the number one cause that American Muslims give to. 81% of American Muslims give to causes of elevating domestic poverty. And you see that in almost every single community, whether it's small communities or you see at a large scale, like what's going on right now in Texas, and anyone who's following social media, you'll see just the response of the American Muslim community to, you know, the crisis there, but also to elevating domestic poverty. So those are some of the things. The other piece about overseas, American Muslims do give to overseas causes. 58% give to overseas causes, but it's similar to how white evangelicals or evangelicals give. You know, so Muslim Americans are not unique. And they're given to overseas causes. So those are some of the highlights. There's a ton more, but I'll stop there for a minute. This, I mean, this, it's a great point, and it's such an important point, because I know, at least in the tradition I grew up in, we're often told, you know, don't let your left hand know what your right hand gave, or the other way around. I'm paraphrasing, but pretty much you're supposed to give your given in secret, and it's not to show off. But the reality is, and this is not a theology stand per se, this is just reading on social matters. The reality is Muslim Americans are talked about all the time. They are portrayed very negatively by the media. Matter of fact, the media portrays American Muslims in Islam worse than cocaine and cancer. Okay? So wow. anytime there's something negative happening by a Muslim or in the Muslim community, it's talked about over and over and over again. And we have not been, as a faith community, we have not been good at documenting and showing and sharing the positive that we do, not to brag about it, but it's a matter of fact, and to leave it as a legacy for the next generation. I know other faith communities do that really, really well, you know, like document volunteer hours, how many volunteer hours were, you know, your high school students from a certain faith community are doing. We don't do that as a Muslim community. And I think this is a first step. And I think there's a lot of work that still needs to be done to document the importance of work that's motivated by our faith, to not only try to flip the script in the narrative that's out there, but also to leave a legacy to American Muslim youth who are faced with so many challenges, including identity challenges, identity crisis. So when they're bombarded with negative conversations, but they can't see the positive that their faith members are doing, it's really challenging to address those identity issues.
Yeah, definitely. And I realized I was on mute for the recording. So my comment to what Petra just responded to was how AMCF was very intentional to have American Muslim as part of our name, so that when people give through AMCF, it indicates that they as an individual are giving to their local food bank or hospital or any other social service organization that's doing good work, or even if it's like a disaster relief organization or so many other great causes that we're giving on behalf of our Muslim identity. And I think, you know, you're exactly right when you say that we need to do a better job of showcasing this. And that's why we're showing that the Muslim community, even though we work with about 100 families right now, but what if we worked with tens of thousands of Muslim families, right? And the giving would be in the hundreds of millions, right? Right now, we have documented that American Muslims that give through AMCF have distributed $3.25 million since 2017. But again, if we're able to scale that impact, what would that look like? So I think AMCF is on the cusp of that, and hopefully showcasing the impact that Muslim philanthropy can have. And I'm equally invested, just like you said, that Muslims give to causes outside of the Muslim community just as likely as they do to the Muslim community. And that Giving USA data shows that the number one is usually religion, number two is usually education, and then a whole list of other categories. And it'd be great to kind of track that through Muslim philanthropy as well to see where the funds go most. And likely you said, you know, the houses of worship and other institutions, and some support going internationally and other support staying here locally. So hopefully we'll be able to track that a little bit better going forward as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is such an important work that you and others are doing, you know, and the research, not just because I'm speaking on behalf of ISPU, but frankly, for the last 20 years, a lot of us didn't have access to this information because it didn't exist. So what we have today, with all the shortcomings that I have, it's such a huge milestone for our community and for what the future could look like. So it's something definitely worth celebrating.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much that ISP does, and this philanthropy report is just one aspect of it, as we talked about some of the other Muslims for American Progress and the American Muslim Poll. Is there anything else that you wanted to share about ISP that we haven't gotten around to yet?
I mean, I think the other thing I want to share is, you know, it's easier to see our work and civic engagement work or research on civic engagement, you know, or even our research related to the mosque. But, you know, I have a message to the Muslim community and a message to the non-Muslim community. You know, there are a lot of issues and causes that in the Muslim American community we talk about, whether it's divorce, youth challenges, just have to be safe on the internet for American Muslim youth, drug abuse, all of these issues, just like any other community is dealing with, preventing divorce. All of these things, you know, we have at least a starting point for anyone who's working on those causes. We do research. We have research that is available on these causes. For the larger community, I know there is a growing interest on addressing religious bigotry or religious discrimination, being in a society that hopefully treats everyone equally, addressing you know, social justice issues, getting to know people of different faith, you know, faith background. And sometimes it's not easy to do that when, frankly, Muslim Americans are only 1%. So even if you have the intention of getting to know a Muslim, you might not find a Muslim around you. So the next best thing to do is learn, you know, find out about Muslim Americans through the research and see how they compare to your own faith community. You might be able to know more about your own faith background from our research than from other places as well. So it's a place for education, for getting the facts in a time when truth telling and facts are becoming a challenging thing for a lot of people. It's also for decision makers and leaders to, you know, one of the struggles that people have is to make the right decision. Even if you don't make the right decision, at least make an informed decision. And that's what we push for, make an informed decision. And that's what we hope our research will enable people to do so. And the good thing is it's all available. You don't have to pay for it.
Yeah, I know I've definitely used the data in my presentations on Islam and philanthropy when I would present at the Association of Funders and Professionals conferences across the country, and still use the data today. So it's definitely been a very welcomed resource. So thank you so much to you and the ISPU team for all of the wonderful work that you do. Looking forward to stay tuned to hear more on the next projects that you guys have in the pipeline. And people can find more on ISPU, again, the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding, on Instagram at the_ISPU or at their website, ispu.org. So Petra, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. I really thank you for sharing all of the vast knowledge that you have on ISPU and just your experience there.
Thank you so much for having me and for all the amazing work that you also do for the community and, you know, for Muslim Americans in general. So thank you.
Happy to do it. Thank you.
We're good.